And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, while investigating rumors of conspiracies surrounding Duchess Satine of Mandalore, Obi-Wan uncovers the truth about a mysterious Mandalorian plot. There'll be Obi-Wan sass, Satine sass, all the sassiness. We're talking about the Mandalore plot this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
That's good. I'm alright. I'm tired today.
I had a great night's sleep last night. I had a tent pitched in our backyard for company, and then I was up here working on podcasts and posting up the last J-Guys and Jedi, and I looked at the weather report and it said thunderstorms. I said, "Ooh, I'm sleeping out in the tent tonight." And I got out in the tent, laid down, and the thunderstorm started. It was great. Lightning, the whole thing. You could hear it, just the thunder coming from the east and traveling, or from the west and traveling over to the east. It was great.
Yeah, my dumb butt. Because, like, I'm a nerd, and I get that I'm a nerd, but I'm also a nerd for sports. And so I've been staying up watching the Olympics. And I knew the women's gymnastics team had won a gold, but I really wanted to see, the moment it happened and everything. But they kept, at the end of every round, they would be like, "Hey, now back to swimming." I'm like, this is great, but I really want to see the gymnastics women, go Michael Phelps and everything, and Katie Ledecky, but I really want to see the women, the women's gymnastics team. And so they're like, "And next is the final round." And I was like, "Oh yes," because it was like 4 a.m. and I was really tired, and I was like laying on my couch trying not to pass out. And they're like, "All right, the big moment, the final event is next." And I was like, "Yeah, it's 4:15. They're like, "But now back to swimming." And I was like, "God, I don't even care." So I was up till 4:30 waiting to see this, and I never got to see it.
Well, you can tell where the ratings are. What the
pop is. The ratings apparently for the Olympics shot up overnight because of Michael Phelps' face.
See, I always thought that I don't pay attention to the Olympics, but I remember them from when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And gymnastics was a big deal when I was a kid.
Still is.
That's what I always thought.
Yeah, but apparently, Michael Phelps had this rival named Chad Leclos. And Chad Leclos has been, staring him down. But there's this great picture of Michael Phelps. Guys, Google Michael Phelps' face.
I know where you're going with this.
And, yeah, and it's just him. He was saying that he was, he was watching the heat. But he's just glaring straight ahead. And people just went crazy. And my absolute favorite was Michael Phelps' face. And someone tweeted, "I did it. I killed all the Padawans and the women." Do it, Anakin. But have you seen that picture?
Yeah, it's just one one of those faces that they catch you with, you know?
Yeah, but it's hilarious. My other favorite is when you're sitting in a waiting room and Nickelback comes on.
I have one of those faces where people look at me and they're like, "What? What? What? You were giving me a look. Was I? Okay."
Sorry. But yeah, so I'm a little tired today. But I want to announce our really super cool news that I found out today.
I haven't even gotten a chance. It's so fresh, I haven't even gotten a chance to go look at it.
I looked at it, and I want all of them. I absolutely want all of them. Especially the tote bags, because I'm a sucker for tote bags.
Well, just to sound like just to show how incompetent I am, what is it our pick? Is it the picture of the clone helmet with our logo on it?
Yes, but our logo on other stuff.
Ooh.
Yes, listeners.
I like that logo. That logo is going to look sharp on things.
Yes.
That's why I was asking.
So, listeners, we found out today that our friend Gene Hendricks had added a J Guys and Jedi store. So by the time this episode comes out, you know, I've already went ahead and put it on all the show notes and everything, so you don't have to worry about that. But, so you can get our logo on some merch. Like, there's some cool tote bags, there's t-shirts, there's sweatshirts, there's duffel bags, there's tumblers, there's, like, heating lunch bags, there's teddy bears. You could have a teddy bear. Like, take that, Build-A-Bear. And so it's just really cool stuff. So we're really, really super excited about it. I'm so happy that Gene set this up. And I know Gene's listening, so thank you so much. And I've already thanked you on Facebook. And this was 7 weeks ago that I thanked you on Facebook. But thank you. So if you check out our show notes at twotruefreaks.com, I've added a link to every episode of where you can buy J Guys and Jedi's merchandise. And yeah, like, really super, like, thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Like, this is really cool.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Gene.
Gene's doing all the work.
Yeah, thank you, Gene. We're happy to reap the benefits from it.
I make the show and I made the logo. I don't even know what's going on. T-shirt? There's a t-shirt of it? Awesome.
Yeah, I really like the tote bags. It looks really nice on the tote bags. And there's even, like, lunch boxes and like, a duffel bag. So I really like those. I will definitely be getting those for work. But the women's hoodie, there's a nice, like, zip-up women's hoodie, and it's really cute, and I want that.
It's one of those things that's going to draw the attention of the right people who know what it is, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, post-Dragon Con, I plan to get one of the shirts for work so I can wear it to work. Because already, like, I run into Star Wars fans, and they're like, oh, you have a Star Wars podcast? I'm like, yeah. So if I'm actually wearing the shirt, they'll be like, oh, cool shirt. And I'll be like, let me tell you about my podcast.
Someday we might actually have a Two True Freaks budget where we can just buy ourselves our own t-shirts.
So yeah.
To wear them.
I still have my old Two True Freaks t-shirt.
I've made, for things separate from the podcast, I've made cafe press accounts for t-shirts of stuff that was based on stuff that I did that I still don't have a copy of. There's people around wearing t-shirts of my stuff, and I don't even have a t-shirt of it.
What I really, just between you and me, want is business cards for Vegas and Jedi, so I can hand them out. Or I might just make us some on, like, that website that just I blinked on. But anyway. But yeah, good fans, go check out our stuff. Do it.
Try.
It's really cool. You could be as swanky as Rex.
Classy. It's classy stuff.
And would you know we're the classiest podcast in the galaxy?
Believe us. We are so classy.
So classy. I wish that's the only thing I wish that under it. I wish it had the classiest in parentheses podcast in the galaxy. That's the only thing that's missing from it. I wish it had that.
Oh, I might have to work on that.
All right, well, I'm ready to get into this episode, are you?
Yeah, I need to work more, like, maybe I just ought to line, like, frame all of our pictures of our podcast from now on with, like, shiny gold. You know, just to add that touch of glass, you know, little mirror and gold look to it.
Yeah, I just think if on the logo, if you had, we're the classiest, in quotations, podcast of the galaxy, I think that'd be enough. But maybe like, what? Like, make, like, a fake, like, gold ribbon?
Maybe we should change our name to J-Guys Platinum.
J-Guys Platinum.
The classiest Clone Wars podcast out there.
I think you should do one where it's, like, a little gold ribbon. It's, like, voted classiest podcast in the galaxy. By us.
By Hope Mullinex and Chris Honeywell, yes.
By us. We voted it that, so yay.
We're arbiters of class. That's what I got, you know. I trust our judgment on that.
And then someone's going to come along and be like, oh, cool, the classiest podcast in the galaxy. And they're going to pick a random episode and hear our episode about dildos.
Yeah. They'll recognize that's class. They'll recognize that.
Yeah, because we taught you guys how to find fancy dildos.
That was a deep laugh you had there. That was just like,
God, everyone says I have an evil laugh. Apparently, I have. have an evil laugh, and I don't like it.
Well, that one was just particularly evil. That one was a standout.
I need to work on my laugh.
She says with an evil laugh.
I need to, like, purposely snort in my evil laughs now. All right, so, the Mandalore plot. Ready?
I am ready.
I'm about to read a lot, so here we go. All right. The Mandalore plot is the 34th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on January 29, 2010. It was directed by Kyle Dunleavy, and written by Melinda Sue, and Drew C. Greenberg. This is the beginning of a three-part storyline. Dave Filoni said, "This is how George has always envisioned the Mandalorians." Of course, people immediately think of the iconic that armor, because that's what that's all we had to go on for so many years. It's mysterious, and we built up that mystique as fans. But Boba and Jango Fett aren't necessarily what I would consider accurate representations of representatives of Mando culture. They're bounty hunters and outlaws, totally rogue. If you go way back to the original concepts, the Mandalorians were a group of super commando troops. It's only now that George is really bringing that up to the screen. They are in the series because he wanted to define their culture, to explore the foundations of this warrior faction. In the episode featurette, Dave also said, "In Pre Vizsla's meeting room, you will see a painting on the back wall. This is a point of contention for me. You have this gorgeous painting that's been done, and you never get to see the full thing. It's one of those amazing things in Star Wars that you only see in 12 frames. It's a Cubist-style painting based on Picasso's Guernica. It depicts the Mandalore war against the Jedi. There are other Cubist-style paintings. There's one of Satina in her throne room, all throughout the Clone Wars. There's these little things that we do to give a sense of culture and history. The style of the painting directly reflects the style of the architecture, the style of the clothing. You get the complete package in this one episode. I wish it framed Pre Vizsla more in the background, but it's there for people to get more depth. Also, the elongated shapes in the Mandalorian helmets in this episode were inspired by Boba Fett's character design in the Star Wars Holiday Special, which I will be seeing in December, because I'm still not allowed to see it yet. Anna Graves is the voice of Satine's voice actor, and she drew upon Cate Blanchett's version of Queen Elizabeth. And because of Satine's relationship with Obi-Wan, she decided to emulate Carrie Fisher's portrayal of Leia Organa. I did not know these next two. John Favreau is the amazing actor and director who was Happy Hogan in Iron Man and directed the films, is the voice of Pre Vizsla. A longtime Star Wars fan, his appearance in Clone Wars was due to when he ran into Dave Filoni at ILM and Skywalker Sound while Favreau was working on post-production for Iron Man. And while I don't mention him much in these notes, because this character doesn't do a lot next week, Satine's little ratty assistant, Tal Merrick, is also voiced by comedian Greg Proops from Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, wow.
I know!
Wouldn't have ever figured that out.
I know, he talked, and then I was like, he sounds kind of familiar, so I googled it, and I was like, Greg Proops, pull something out of a hat!
Favreau's a pretty big voice actor to have in this episode, that's a pretty...
Yeah, and I like that they continue, because Vizsla's one of those characters that keeps coming back over multiple seasons, so I'm glad that they actually, he came back every time, like, he was Vizsla's voice actor the entire run through, so I find that super cool. And finally, the character design for Duchess Satine, and her Royal Guard was based on an abandoned character concepts for the Phantom Menace. The design for Satine was based on Queen Amidala's illustrations by Ian McCraig, and the designs for her Royal Guard came from the same artist's experiments with the Sith.
Interesting, with an evil group.
Your turn. Your turn.
Okay, let me stretch my vocal cords, because this one's, part always is strained.
Oh, poor you. You get to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You get to say 9 words, you poor thing. But
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 words.
Wait, what?
If you ignore the past, you jeopardize your future.
Oh, yeah.
In 10. Bad. 11.
You turned that up to 11, Yoda.
Ah, ha, ha. Yes, Yoda is turned up to 11. Look.
No, I'm good.
All right, time for Yoda to go.
That was actually, I actually really like this one. Because if you ignore your past exes, your future will be pretty crappy with your current person.
That's true. Well, if you forget everything you've learned,
you're bad.
Then you're going to be pretty boring.
Yeah, it'll be pretty stagnant.
It'd be like Memento or that, what was it like, 101 First Dates or something like that. That's stupid.
You were about to say 101 Dalmatians.
It'd be just like 101 Dalmatians.
Completed with Cruella and animal cruelty. Yay! Oh, man. I bet. Oh, I bet Cruella DeVille's a furry secretly. She has the most realistic costume.
Exactly. She has the most cruel furry suit ever.
She made it herself. With real pappies. And people are like, oh, and they're like, wow, this is the best faux fur ever. And she's like, it's not faux fur. I clubbed them myself. Oh, man. She would totally be into, like, BDSM furry sex. This is a weird episode so far. Oh, now I'm thinking about my laugh.
We just crossed the Disney stream. It's okay. I'm gonna cross the Harry Potter stream sometime in this episode.
Yep. Oh, I'm excited about that. I love Harry. I'm saving up to get my Star Wars tattoo, but I do have a Harry Potter tattoo already.
What's your Star Wars tattoo gonna be?
Take two guesses, and the first one doesn't count.
It's gonna be Jay Guys?
Yeah.
Yes. Right on your forehead, right? You're gonna really commit, right?
No. I actually saw a really cool design.
Loser.
It's gonna be on my left upper forearm, it's gonna be the J Guys, but with little tally marks around it, so it's Rex's Phase 2 armor. But I saw this really cool design, and it was, instead of, like, solid colors, it was all watercolored, so it looks like the blue had been splashed on there. And I really like that design. I've never had a color tattoo before. All my tattoos are black and white, so I don't know if I want to break the cycle. But the blue is so significant. Like, that is the 501st colors. And I think, like, if I don't have the blue, it might just look like a weird tribal thing, while somebody who knows the show would be like, oh, man, Jay Guys. Yeah. So, and it's going to be expensive anyway. I can't afford it at the moment, so it's not going to be happening anytime soon.
Rochester, there's a tattoo. It's competitive up here. There's a tattoo place at every corner, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of it is also, I just can't afford it. So if you guys want me to get a really cool Jay Guys tattoo, go visit our Jay Guys and Jedi merchandise shop. Not that we would actually get any of the money. Yeah, we wouldn't get any of the money. But it's a cool idea.
Portions of this t-shirt go to Hope Mullinex's Jay Guys tattoo.
I'd do it for you guys, listeners. I really would. I really would, and if I had the money, I would totally, like...
That's what we gotta make. We gotta make, like, the old Cracker Jacks prizes. Like, you know, the Jay Guys tattoos that you just lick and stick to your arm.
That'd be cool. I have a Cad Bane one. I never used it. It's on my knick-knack shelf. I have a Cad Bane lick and stick tattoo.
Save it for... Wow. Yeah, I'd save that for a special occasion.
Yeah, I'm never going to use it.
Know what special occasion that would be, but it would be a rare one, I'm,
like,
sure.
Maybe if I ever go to a celebration.
Right, right.
And be a lick and stick and...
And tell people, they're like, I like your Cad Bane tattoo, and go, that's a birthmark.
Yeah. That's what I'll do. Either that, or if I ever go to a celebration, I'll just give it to Dave Filoni or something.
Right.
Or at least bring it to show and be like, look what I got, Dave. Thanks for everything.
You lick his forehead and then you stick it on.
Yes, that's exactly what we'll do. All right, so act one.
Act one.
All right, let me scooch down so I can see it. All right. Act one. The Council of Neutral Systems is about 1,500 planets that wish to stay out of the Clone Wars, but there are rumors that the Council's leader, Duchess Satine of Mandalore, is secretly building an army to fight for the Separatists. Obi-Wan Kenobi has been sent to Mandalore to find out the truth about these claims. Upon arriving on the planet, Kenobi is greeted by Prime Minister Almec, who is aghast at the claims about a secret army. He states firmly that Duchess Satine values peace over her own life. Kenobi totally understands this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Satine and him have totally done the dirty Yoda in the past. Almec states that the Mandalore's violent past is behind them, and all their warriors were sent to the moon Concordia and died out. But Kenobi recalls running into Jango Fett. Almec shoots down this, saying that Jango Fett was a bounty hunter and has no idea where he got that armor from. Satine enters with all her grace and glory and immediately calls out Obi-Wan. He takes it well and getting straight to business, saying that a Mandalorian attacked a Republic cruiser. The saboteur took his own life before submitting for questioning. Almec, who I'm super tempted to call New Yularen, is like, preposterous! No Mandalorian would ever hurt a space butterfly, no siree! Satine firmly states that her people are peaceful and that the Senate needs to get the hell out of her planet's business. Obi-Wan corrects her that it was the Jedi Council who sent him, not the Senate. Respectfully taking the correction, she invites Kenobi on a walk, on a tour of the city. Satine admits being glad to see her ex Blue again, and he congratulates her on Mandalore's expanding prosperity under her watch. But not everyone agrees with her new direction. There's a terrorist cell called Death Watch who is probably the ones behind the attack. She says they've been a small group mostly, just vandalizing stuff, and they've tracked them down to the moon of Concordia. It's really nothing to worry about. On Concordia, a man in Mando armor, who is, I'm just going to go ahead and say it is Pre Vizsla, just to get that out of the way, is talking to Count Dooku about Kenobi's arrival. Dooku assures that if the Republic sends forces to Mandalore in an occupation, the people will rebel against them. They plan to move forward to rally more people to join Death Watch's side and overthrow the Duchess. Back on Mandalore, Satine and Obi-Wan debate the real roles of peacekeepers. She even calls him out, saying the reality of war has made him abandon his ideals as a Jedi. Their talk is cut short when a bomb goes off in a square, killing several citizens. Satine claims it must be an off-worlder, but the symbol of Death Watch floats before the wreckage. She can't deny it anymore. Kenobi orders the guards to keep everyone at the bombing site, but a man flees suddenly, and Kenobi gives chase. He corners the attacker on the balcony. The man chooses to leap off the balcony and take his own life. Satine and Obi-Wan race down below. In his dying words, Satine listens to the man and comforts him as he dies. He speaks in the dialect of their moon, and Obi-Wan wants to visit this moon. But it has its own governing body, so Satine will need to go with him, especially since he was involved in the death of a Concordian. Obi-Wan claims he didn't kill the man. Satine Z-snaps back. That's why she's still talking to him.
Ooh.
I love her! You know, I just realized something. How dumb are the Mandalorians if they're like, yes, we sent all of our most deadly people to the moon, and we didn't check to see if they died out. Oh god, terrorists! I wonder where they came from.
They probably just died out, sure.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We're just gonna listen to everything Pre Vizsla says to us. So what'd you think of Act 1?
I like it. I love the way Mandalore looks. And, you know, I was so psyched when this first came out that we were finally going to get... So I'm not an EU reader, so I know there were stories about Mandalore and some canon set up about Mandalore that this I don't know if it runs into trouble with the canon here or in the future stories, but I know there was some controversy about that, but I wasn't aware of any of that other stuff. So this was like, all right, this is our introduction to Mandalore.
So you answered a question I was about to ask you. So this, after the original trilogies and the prequels, this really is truly the first time we're seeing Mandalorian canon, right? Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I'm not an EU reader too, so I do know that there's like a pass on everything, but I couldn't remember if there was like any other canon things.
There was the Marvel Comics had a story with Fenn Shisa, who was basically, they thought he was Boba Fett at first, but he was another guy in Mandalorian armor, and it had, you know, it had a couple page spread where it sort of did a sketchy history of Mandalore and, you know, their power as a military, but it was very, very vague, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was what was used in the EU when they built upon it. I think that was just ignored.
Okay. Because I was just like, I don't remember. I think that this really is the first time we're saying Mark. I don't know.
As far as I was concerned, it was. So I was very excited about it when... I love the look of Mandalore.
Me too.
Color scheme.
It's very 1920s architecture. Like, there's a ton of Art Nouveau stuff, like Vincent Picasso. And just, like, a lot of the lighting design is so beautiful. Like, everything is in a cubist state. And, Art Nouveau is, like, one of my favorite time periods of art. So I was just like, yes!
It's got a very open look to it, too. It's, like, metal and glass. And lots of... all the buildings are very open and spacious.
I will say I wish we got to see more of the planet, because when flying in, everything around it looks like a desert, but they were inside that bubble.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I originally had in the notes and I took it out, but Filoni, I think it was Filoni, but he said that, like, there's more to the planet than just the desert area around the capital.
I would think of Mandalore as being kind of a kind of tough terrain anyway. That's why they're such great warriors.
Yeah.
You know, they built their terrain out of, they built themselves into a, you know, peaceful technological power, but they had to do it by, you know, fighting in a hostile environment.
I mean, their capital city is in a freaking desert.
Exactly.
It's a bubble in a desert, so.
It'd be like Las Vegas being our capital.
It's still a better design than, you know, than Senate Spy, the Nemordians built their city on a hammock.
Right.
So much better design.
I'm going to cross the streams now.
Okay, I'm excited.
Wasn't that a Death Watch Horcrux, basically?
Yes.
That's the first thing I thought of. I'm like, oh, this is like Harry Potter. It's just like, oh, we blew something up. Here's who did it.
Yeah, the dark mark in the sky. I like it.
Dark mark, that's what it was. Is Horcrux the correct...
No, the Horcrux are the seven, then later revealed to be Harry, eight items that Voldemort used to
Right, learn. Okay, so yeah, it's a dark mark.
But it's a dark mark.
So I tried to cross the streams.
You got close. I'll gold star.
Thank you.
Quick question. Since this is canon and everything, this is really our first time seeing Satine. So what was your, like, original thoughts of Satine, like, the first time you ever saw her?
Just based on this episode, if I pretend that I... And it's been a long time since I've seen the other episodes. But, yeah, you instantly pick up on her history with Kenobi. And, you know, there's just a sort of... She's got a sort of little bit of alien look to her, but then again, so does Amidala in Clone Wars.
I don't like that headdress, because actually, until her traveling outfit later on the episode, this little horn thing, I thought that was literally her hair, and I thought she was an alien.
Well, she is.
Technically, yeah.
Yeah.
They're humanoid.
But I thought she was, in a way... And this isn't a slam on her, the typical Star Wars, you know, strong woman. And of course she is. She's a ruler, you know, but she's also, you know, you get the total impression that she's a ruler, but she's no stranger to a fight and adventure, and, you know, she's an active ruler, you know, she's held a gun and been in a few fights before, you know. She's not just like a protected member of royalty who's just sort of been, you know, in a bubble all her life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would make sense if she has history with Obi-Wan that she was probably in some kind of shit show.
She actually also, because I haven't read it, but I saw it on the Wikipedia. The way they met, it was when Obi-Wan was a Padawan, and there was a conflict on Mandalore, and it was Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon that went, and they lived there for a year protecting Mandalore and protecting her.
Oh, okay, so he sort of met her in an Anakin Amidala sort of way, so it's very analogous.
Yeah, and so, like, I do wish they kind of mentioned that more, like, do we know if they've seen each other since Qui-Gon's been dead, or, like, at least have a moment where she expresses condolences, because if she lived, they lived with her for a year, like, you know, she probably got to know Qui-Gon and everything, too.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wish they touched on that a little bit more, because it was only in one comic, and I don't even think the comic's technically canon anymore. I don't think any of the Clone Wars comics are canon.
Oh, no, probably not.
But I don't know for sure, because a lot of the comics were released weekly on StarWars.com every week when the episodes air. And so, listeners, if you know, let us know, because I don't actually know if they are anymore.
They are if they want them to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of Harry Potter, like, if fans are just like, oh, that's not canon anymore to me, talking about the 8th book. But I still stand by my firm assumption, whether or not you like it, it's canon if it comes from, if they say it's canon, meaning the original source. Like, you know.
If anybody's going to be able to declare it canon, that's who is.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I've always felt about Clone Wars. You know, like, people are just like, oh, Clone Wars is not canon. And I'm like, no, the Lucas Story Group says it's canon, so it's canon. And that's how I... You know, like, the example I've been using all week about The Cursed Child was, I hate season 4 of Once Upon a Time. The only saving grace of the fucking Frozen season is freaking Michael Sacha. Like, that's the only reason that got me through that, because I wanted to keep seeing him in the show that I love him so much in. And so, like, just because I hated it doesn't mean it's not canon, though. Like, that is the official canon.
Right, right.
So, you can hate something, but it's still canon. So, sorry, kids. So, did you have anything else for Act 1?
The only other note I had is when the guy jumped off the building, they did that great shot where, you know, the dizzying height shot of him standing there and then just falling backwards. And then it's like, oh, man, what an embarrassingly short fall, though. You know, I thought he was going to fall, like, thousands of feet, and it's just like, clench.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't even know if that fall was long enough to crunch the pavement up like it was, but whatever.
Yeah, you will say it was a nice moment, like, it had to be a Disney moment because there was, like, zero blood on the pavement.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, that's when someone... But even from a couple stories, it's still pretty terrifying. Okay, here's a story. So, in the mall that I work in, when I was much younger and I was in high school... where the movie theater is, it's up on the third story, and then you have the other two stories of the mall. And they've now put up nets because for a long time they had problems with jumpers. And there was one time me and my mom came out of a movie, and we went all the way to the first floor to get some Starbucks before we were leaving. And we got down there, and people were just, like, at the information booth at Starbucks were just, like, standing outside and was absolutely aghast and just looked completely shocked. And it turns out we had missed seeing a jumper by about 40 minutes.
Oh, jeez.
And there was still blood just, like, splattered up on the columns, and it was terrifying. Like, it was super terrifying to see, and I was only, like, 13. It was so terrifying. But I just remembered, like, oh, it was... I don't ever want to see something like that again, and I definitely never want to see it in real life. So, hey,
here's hoping.
Yeah, happier things, like Star Wars. So I want to add a clarification first before I say my first point, which was, it's about Jango Fett. Like, he claims to be from the Mandalorian planet of Concord Dawn, and Fett was a Mandalorian in the Star Wars EU. But in the Creating Mandalore featurette on the Clone Wars Season 2 DVD, Dave Filoni explains that, according to George Lucas, the Fetts were not Mandalorians. And after the creation of the official Star Wars canon, Pablo Hidalgo of Lucasfilm's story group reiterated the fact that the Fetts are not Mandalorians. And the reason I'm pointing this out is, I wonder how the Mandalorian people feel about the clones sporting the face of someone claiming to be Mandalorian, and the fact that the clones have similar armor to their own people.
Stolen valor, man.
Yeah, I bet that's a point of contingency. Like, it probably pisses them off.
Yeah, of course it would. No, no military unit wants their stuff you know, ripped off, especially if it's not, if it's being in the service of something that's not representative of what they would do, like bounty hunting and general mercenariness.
Yeah. Because, like, I think, like, I've always thought that Boba Fett was, you know, being a bounty hunter. I always kind of associated that with, like, oh, that's must how all Mandalorians be. That's how they be, how Mandalorians are. And so I kind of like the fact that they, like, take a point to actually really distinguish that the Fetts weren't like that. And that Mandalore is not like that.
They were that makes rogues. Sense.
Yeah. You're... It's like that moment in Mean Girl. You don't even go here. And she doesn't even go to the school. I just imagined Pre Vizsla sitting at a table with Satine and a bunch of people looking at Boba Fett. And they're like, and on Wednesdays, we wear pink.
Who is this guy?
Why is Satine's hair so big? Because it's full of secrets. Okay, I have to talk about Satine and Obi-Wan, okay?
All right, I see a lot of pink notes on this, so I know you got something to say.
Yeah, okay. So, if Anakin and Padme are the toxic newlyweds, Obi-Wan and Satine are the old married couple that bickers with each other. Because Satine's first moments are so vital to absolutely setting up her character. She comes in, and she nicely thanks him for his compliments, and in the very same sentence, she throws it back in his face so gracefully. And Obi-Wan, unlike Anakin, is super thoughtful and patient and calm with her. Like, he needs that equally balanced partner to be his potential romantic, his romantic relationship. And they're so similar. Like, they're both so easy at taking, like, each other's... Because they're constantly kind of, like, nitpicking at each other and stuff like that, but they never take it seriously. Where I feel like if it... You know, Anakin is just like, don't worry, sweetheart, blah, blah, blah. And Padme's just like, what?! And then Padme would be like, don't worry, sweetheart, it's just for the war. And Anakin's like, what? And so that's what I love about the difference between these two people. And it always kind of made me sad. Like, I'm wondering if Anakin and Padme had actually worked out, if maybe like 10 years in the future, if they would have been just like Obi-Wan and Satine.
Yeah, I could see it.
But I love them. I love Obi-Wan and Satine.
I knew you were going to. As soon as the banter started, it's like, oh, this has hope all over it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Romance. I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker for it. But, and then the other... wow, I have more notes than I thought I did. Just kidding. I was going to say the other last note, and then I looked down, and there's like three more. Just a fun Star Wars Rebels note. Satine's mother has actually been confirmed to be part of Death Watch. And apparently, later on
Satine
in season
or five, Sabine?
Oh, sorry, Sabine's mother. Sabine Wern, from Rebels, the pink awesome Mandalore that's on the Ghost Crew. Her mother was part of Death Watch. And in the season 5 arc, her mom is actually in the throne room with Maul. And a lot of fans theorize that she's the Mandalorian female with Maul in the Son of Dathomir comics. So I thought that's just really cool, because now we're in Mando's, and yeah. And you know what I love about Satine? Satine, not Sabine. Satine. By the way, they're not related. A lot of fans were like, they have similar names. Are they related? No, Sabine and Satine are not related. But I love, what I love about Satine is when the bomb goes off, she does not run away. She runs right to her injured people and checks on them.
Yep, she runs right into the danger zone.
Yeah, and she doesn't know if there's, like, another bomb or another attacker or sniper nearby, and she just doesn't care. Like, she's such a good leader, and she really cares about her people. And to add to it, the scene with the dying terrorist, she could have, like, scorned him, she could have called him a villain, she could have reacted in anger. But instead, like, she knows this person is part of her people, and they're unhappy with this new direction of her government, and she was willing to listen to a dying man, and she gave him that respect in those final moments, and, like, gosh, she's just such a beautiful character. I love Satine. I love her. I love her, Chris.
Well, why don't you marry her?
I wish I could.
Yeah, well, Obi-Wan's gonna marry her first.
No, he ain't.
No.
He's not. Get to season 5. That's not going to happen. She dead.
He dead, too.
He,
they
he,
all like, dead.
They all dead.
A long time ago.
Far, far away. Yep. They turn into stardust.
Why should we even care? They all dead.
It's like saying, why should we care about every
Star Wars movie and just stand up and be like, why should I care about this? All these people are dead.
Oh, man. That'd be great. But then, like, for all we know, like, an actor could pass away, like, a week before, and you do that, and the fans would just attack.
Yeah,
be like, no!
By luck, exactly.
Oh, man, I dare you to. When Rogue One comes out, be like, if this isn't a galaxy far, far away...
Rogue One's coming, so...
Oh, man, the new trailer is tomorrow! I can't wait! I'm so excited. Don't spoil anything else for me again, Chris.
Okay, sorry.
God.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Do you have anything to add or counter notes to my notes at all?
No, that was covered quite a bit there.
Yeah, characters, man. Characters is my forte. That's the one. They're my babies. They're all my babies. They're so precious babies. And they're going to make pretty babies, but they're not because they're dead. All right, so Act 2, which is much shorter. Satine and Obi-Wan are all... Yeah, that was a long first act, by the way.
It was a long... There's been a lot of long first acts lately in these shows.
Yeah, and then you have these second and third acts, which are, like, super compressed. Yep. Alright, anyway, Act 2. Satine and Obi-Wan are off to Concordia. We get a bit of background on the moon. It used to be agricultural, but the Mando Civil Wars turned it into a mining planet. Forests are now just growing back, and this is only important because the abandoned mining grounds is where Death Watch is, just FYI. They are greeted by Governor Pre Vizsla, the shady dude from earlier, again, just FYI, and he says that he supports Satine's investigation of Death Watch and has been leading it for her on Concordia. He excuses himself to attend with the body of the dead terrorist. Obi-Wan wants Satine to keep Vizsla busy while he investigates the nearby mining facilities. He gives her an earpiece to stay in contact. They flirt for a brief moment before he zooms away on a speeder. He arrives at the mining facility and sees that it's not abandoned. He is suddenly attacked by Mandalorians. A second Mando arrives and they quickly capture Obi-Wan. I lost my thought. Where am I? Satine talks openly with Vizsla about Death Watch growing, realizing that it must be someone at the highest level of the Separatists that's giving them aid and feeding Republic lies about her. Vizsla actually compliments her because she's leader of the Council of Neutral Systems. She's clearly standing up against the Separatists. Obi-Wan wakes up on a mining platform and calls Satine. She gracefully doesn't arouse suspicion as she excuses herself for some fresh air. Taking a speeder, Satine goes off to save her man.
Hey, save my man.
Gotta go and save my man.
She can kick ass and she can do the double meaning spy dialogue.
Yeah.
To get her, you know, answer his question and answer Obi-Wan's question at the same, you know, reply to them both and all the while getting herself out of dinner.
Yeah.
And the politics in Clone Wars and in this episode and in Clone Wars in general worked so much better than they did in the movies.
God, yeah.
They're way more interesting and have to do with the stories and are less clunky and add to everything a lot more. It's just they're just handled so much better.
Oh yeah, like that's something I've always loved about Clone Wars, and I think that's part of the reason. Like originally, like the Mando episodes kind of bore me, but like when I was much younger and watching that, but now that I'm older, I'm just like, oh my god, these are so in depth.
Yeah, I mean, her conversation with Pre Vizsla is a great I mean, everything that's said in that whole thing between her and Obi-Wan and him. Is all double meaning, you know. It's great.
What I also love about it is the fact that I like on one hand, it kind of makes Satine look a little, I don't want to say dumb, but too trusting, because like Pre Vizsla completely did everything under her nose. And
right, but that's so often how it is. She, you know, he probably earned her trust the hard way, you know. He probably like truly earned her trust.
Yeah, and so I actually really do like that scene that, like, we know later that they're enemies, but they come off as friends in that scene.
Well, but he's explaining to her why they're gonna kill her. You know, I mean, he's in a friendly manner telling her why he wants her dead, you know?
I just thought of Frozen.
It's cold-blooded, but at the same time, These Mandalorians, they just have respect for each other, even if they're on opposite end. You know, he definitely has respect for her.
I just thought of Frozen.
Of what?
Frozen.
Oh, I still have not seen that.
The villain song is wrapped up in the middle of a love song.
Oh, okay.
There's a song called Love is an Open Door, and that's Han's villain song. And he's singing about, like, it's a very fun song, and it's super lovely and everything. But then you find out that, hey, he's the villain, and it's a moment you go back and you're like, he has one line that says, I've been looking my whole life to find my own place. That's his villain intention. And
right. It's not a good place.
No. You realize that that's his villain song. So that's true. He is telling Satine exactly how he's, like, why she's going to die.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Very well written. Yeah. Way more nuance and skill than anything in the prequels as far as political intrigue goes.
Yeah. I actually only had one note for this scene. And that is, I like Pre Vizsla as a villain. You know, Cad Bane is great because you know that he's super deadly.
Mm-hmm.
And Dooku's a stooge, Grievous is a clinker. But why Vizsla is so great is because he's a political villain and he's deadly. And as a politician, he knows exactly what to say to keep Death Watch in hiding for so long. And he's so good at what he does, appearing as a concerned leader. Like, he was even writing a condolence letter to the dead man's family. And I'm sure he, you know, at some point, it's never said, but I bet he even purposely turned in some of his own lackeys to make it look like he was capturing Death Watch people. I mean, he's just such a good villain.
Well, he's sort of the opposite of Jar Jar Camel from the last episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's sort of the evil Columbo of villains. He's low key in his villainy. I don't know. In the next act, I'm gonna also. There's this episode and the last episode have more ties to him than I think they sort of appear at first.
Okay. So act three then.
Act three.
That's where the rest of my notes are. All right. Act three. The Mando start the mining crushing machine, I don't know what it's called, as Satine arrives. She purposely sets off an alarm, pulling the guards away from Obi-Wan. Satine and Obi-Wan beautifully bicker at each other as he's about to die, and she races to shut off the machine. She stops the crusher, but not the runway. The guards return, but Satine kicks a barrel into the gears. Obi-Wan parkours off the barrel and nails the guard holding Satine. He knocks out the other guard, and they hop on an elevator shaft out of there. I'm waiting for my thank you, Satine goads at Obi-Wan, but their flirting is cut short as the doors open and they're in the Mandalorian main camp. Surrounded by Death Watch, Obi-Wan stands to fight, but he doesn't have his lightsaber. In a very rare and cool moment, Obi-Wan takes up a freaking blaster and shoots one of the Mandos out of the sky. Another swoops in and tackles Obi-Wan. Satine distracts him long enough for Kenobi to get the best of him. The leader of the Death Watch orders an evacuation of the base. He strolls up to face Kenobi himself, killing his own man who Kenobi bested, because you can't have weakness. He removes his helmet to reveal that it's Pre Vizsla. His people used to defend Mandalore against the Jedi, but Satine has tarnished that name. Vizsla gives Kenobi back his lightsaber to fight one-on-one. Vizsla whips out his very awesome dark saber, an old Jedi relic from the Old Republic when it fell. Kenobi and Vizsla kung fu fight, but Obi-Wan easily bests him, and Vizsla orders his warriors to finish him. Obi-Wan easily dodges the missiles, but they come back around. Grabbing Satine, Obi-Wan and she leap into the elevator shaft and roll out of the way from the fiery, exploding debris. Vizsla calls off his men. They will see Satine soon enough. Satine helps Obi-Wan outside and banters that they're even now. She saved his life and he saved hers. Bygones and all. The next day, Satine's assistant, Tal Merrick, voiced by Greg Proops, says that Vizsla is gone, but they don't know how big Death Watch really is. Obi-Wan is like, it's obviously the Separatists, so you should totes my goats join the Repubs, babe. Satine wants nothing of it, and she's angry that Obi-Wan doesn't support her neutrality. With a hair flip for the ages, Sue storms onto her ship. Anakin, Captain Rex, and Commander Covey arrive for transport duty. Anakin sees his old master and is like, "Hey, what's going on with you and that lady?"
He knows. He knows because he's got one of his own.
The end. Oh, God. Anakin is the reason why I love next episode so much. He's just like, "Go save your girlfriend." Okay. Yeah.
I remember that, those lines still from that.
Oh, it's so great. I love Anakin. You know, I bet, like, it's one of those things that if he could openly be with Padme, I'm sure that Obi-Wan would be, like, bickering, like, just picking the hell out of Anakin for Padme. And now Anakin gets to do it himself.
Yeah, it's, you can tell this was a setup episode.
Yeah.
Classic, Obi-Wan's the classic girl tied to the train tracks.
He's the hot girl.
Yeah. And this time, tying it in with the other episode, it's Obi-Wan who loses his lightsaber.
Yeah.
So Obi-Wan and Anakin both lose their lightsabers in two episodes right in a row.
No, it was Ahsoka that lost hers.
Or Ahsoka, that's right. I keep getting it, yeah.
They're all the same.
I like that dark lightsaber sound design.
Oh, me too. The pew!
Yeah, it's definitely, you can tell it's like an older design and it's not as good. And Obi-Wan's just like, "Oh, this whole thing, yeah, it's cool looking, but yeah, sorry, sucker."
Yeah, I love the darksaber. I love the look of it. I like when it whooshes. It makes that, like, whoosh sound, but on top of it, it's just...
Mandalorian and all, but if they're going to get the best of a Jedi, we see that the way to do it is to kick him in the head. Don't come at him with their own, you know, come at him with their own weapon.
But, oh, man, it makes me wish that, like, we got more... I know there's a bajillion EU things, but I would love to see, like, a canon, like, Old Republic thing.
And I just love that old, that last shot of the ship launching. It looks like an old-fashioned, like, Titanic cruise ship.
Yeah.
Going out of dock. But then as it gets further away, you see it has this big, long, like, tail underneath it, you know, sort of stabilizing thing hanging underneath it. But until that point, it totally looks like somebody's just, like, broke a champagne bottle against it and shoved it down the ramp.
There was only one thing missing from after the fight with Pre Vizsla and Satine was helping Obi-Wan back. I wish they got on the same speeder and Obi-Wan rode bitch.
Oh.
That would have been great. That would have been so great. Like, something just like, Satine's just like, "I'll drive." But, like, Obi-Wan is, like, totally cool with it because he totally respects her and, like, sees her as a great woman. And he just gets on happily and just puts his arms around her and just like, yay.
Sure, he would. Yeah, Obi-Wan wouldn't have any hang-ups about that.
Yeah, Anakin would be like, "I would never ride
exactly.
bitch."
Anakin would too, but he would put up. He would make a show about, like, being like, "Don't I get okay?"
Obi-Wan always lets me drive. Obi-Wan always lets me drive, Padme. I listened to the episode where we did a bunch of Anakin teenager voices, and we need to do that more. By the way,
Obi-Wan.
That's exactly the voice.
It's so not fair.
He gets to hang out with his girlfriend.
I want to be a Jedi too. Why can't I be a Jedi?
Why does Obi-Wan always get to hang out with his girlfriend?
Stupid.
I never get to see Padme. I just want to see Padme.
That's how we got to third base yet.
I was supposed to, and then Rex came along. Toby had to go out on a mission. God,
maybe
Rex.
They didn't even have sex. Maybe he had, like, Jedi sperm and just impregnated her in their sleep.
Oh my God! That's called...
Force sperm. High midichlorian count.
I'm pretty sure that's called rape.
Force rape? Yeah, that's what happened to Anakin's mom.
I just choked on my coffee.
Yeah, everybody chokes on the idea of force rape. It's not good.
We don't know who Anakin's dad is, do we?
No, he has no dad. He was...
Literally, the Force is Anakin's dad?
He has... Well, there's many theories about it.
Is she Mary, Mother of Jesus?
When we get to the prequels, that's how they start out episode one. He's like...
What?
That was one of the big fan moments of contention in the movie theater when he goes, who's the father? She goes... There is no father, and he's like, how can there be no father? And she's just like, I can't tell you. I couldn't tell you. They're just,
are you serious?
Yeah, there was no father. And then, and when you get to episode three, Palpatine pretty much lays out to Anakin that, yeah, it was probably him and his old master learned how to create life using the Force. So it might have been Palpatine Darth Plagueis that created Anakin out of the Force.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're getting there in December. Don't worry. I'll walk you through it.
Just to remind listeners, I haven't seen the prequel since I was like 8. So I don't remember these things. Oh my God, are you
serious?
There's
a lot of rumors about Rey that Rey is basically that, Rey is basically a clone of Anakin. She's another Force created being, and you know, she's just basically the female version of Anakin.
You can't see me like squinting hard at the computer, but what?
The key tagline is Luke going, "No, Rey, you are my father." You laugh, but that's going around the internet. That was supposedly a leaked story treatment.
So Rey is reincarnated Anakin?
Yeah, she's basically cut a female, like she would be like the female, like if you had a male and female twins. Yep.
What? Yep. I'm confused. Yep. My brain really hurts right now. Okay, I'm gonna go back to simpler things.
Yeah, just drop it out and we'll get back to it in December.
What? You're making me... Oh my God.
Wait, did I just blow your mind?
Blew my fucking mind. Not even a little bit. You blew my fucking mind. Are you serious?
Yeah, you can look it up on the internet on your leisure time.
Oh my God. Okay, so let's talk about pacifism. I'm going to talk about pacifism for a second.
Yes, I see this note, and I think I have a I don't know if they're pacifists.
Yeah, because I know how much you hated the Lermans, and so which is why I kind of wanted to bring this up.
She's no Pappy Lerman.
No, she ain't no Pappy Lerman. She's better than Pappy Lerman. She's like Pappy God.
No, she like eats Pappy Jesus. Lermans for snacks.
Where did I get my thing? Sorry, I lost a spool of thread somewhere. Anyway, I want to talk about it because there's a difference between Satine and the Lerman episode. The Lerman flat out refused to fight at all and would have happily died to not fight. And I would say that Satine is actually more of a nonviolent person
She's for peace, but if put into a corner, I'm sure they will fight, you know.
Yeah.
They have to, I'm sure they'll fight, but it's instead of being aggressive, I picture them being more defensive, you know.
Yeah,
we want to, and not just defensive, but, you know, we want to avoid conflict as much as possible.
Yeah, because the thing about her is that, like, she'll fight to defend herself, but she will exhaust every peaceful resource first.
Yeah, no, I think they were doing the speak softly and carry a big stick approach.
Yeah.
Which I'm a lot more for that than the Lerman style of, which is just like, we'll just lay down here and die now.
Come, roll over us in our tanks.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do. Just club me on the head like I'm a big seal.
And then Cruella will wear all of them.
Exactly. I'll be your Lerman cosplay at Lermacon. You'll be the belle of the ball at Lermacon.
Oh my God. Oh, man. Oh my God. Oh my, I can't. Oh, my stomach hurts. laughed far too hard in this episode.
I know, we're laughing at clubbing Pappy Lerman to death with a stick.
Well, George Takei would have done that in the episode. Because George Takei... Not to say that George Takei would actually club a Lerman. What I'm saying is his... He played the villain in the episode. That's what I meant. Okay, so...
Not violent, but their fur is so silky.
Oh my god! So, I'm going to talk about...
They make the most wonderful socks.
Oh my god, little toe socks, and they actually have little toes on them.
They roll across the ground as you walk.
Oh my god. I quit Jay as a Jedi now.
Ah, just when we're getting classier.
Oh my god. Oh man, and you drug your neighbor's cat with catnip, I don't want to hear it. You terrible person.
I'm going to try to do it again tonight.
You're going to steal your neighbor's cat.
Comes out around 11:30. I'll be out there with the nip. Hey, little buddy. What you doing?
Nothing.
Yeah, why'd you come over here?
You have some drugs for me, nice man?
Yeah, pretty soon he'll be rolling on his back and like half-heartedly batting at my hands.
Like, hi. Hi. This is the good shit.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. He's got a tag. His name is Meow. It's the most unimaginative cat name ever.
Yeah. At least make him, like, Commander. Catmander Meow.
Catmander Meow would be good, but I call him Orangey for now.
Not
we'll see.
Totally
if, I'll find him a new name as I figure out.
You should call him Catmander Cody.
Ooh, Catmander Cody is a good one. We'll see if he lives up to Catmander Cody, though. Or he might be, you know, or, well, it would be good if it's an ironic Catmander Cody, too. I think he's kind of a wimp.
Well,
I don't even know if it's a he. It could be a she. I have not checked the genitals yet. What? Not done a genital check yet.
I just imagine you reaching under a cat and going,
well,
I'll
just do it randomly in any kind of company. I'll just be like, all of a sudden, I'll be like, all right, everybody, line up, genital check. That's why I don't hang out with people too much, Hope.
This is why Chris is a loser.
What are you talking about?
I'm kidding, I love you. You're like the prettiest belle at the Lerman Ball.
I am.
Not even gonna lie, there's a mobile game called Neko Atsumi, and all my cats are named either after Star Wars characters, Once Upon a Time characters, or Sherlock characters. And so, for example, I have Catmander Cody, Captain Wolf, Captain Rex, I have Jesse, I have Kix, I have Catmander Wolf. Kanan, I named him Kanan because I had this cat, and for the first week, I could never get a picture of it looking at me, so I thought it was blind. So I named that cat Kanan because I'm a terrible person.
Jeez.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the teen being nonviolent for a second again, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I don't have a problem with the teen being nonviolent because I don't see this being a weak character trope. Because, you know...
It's stronger in the way they're doing it.
Yeah, and the fact that she stands so... Because I can see where a lot of people are like, oh, Satine's a weak female character, she's not fighting. Well, no, not necessarily. Because what makes her so strong is that she so firmly stands behind her beliefs, which makes her such a strong female character.
What makes her kick ass is if you back her in the corner and she has to fight, she's gonna whoop you bad. So
yeah. Because, like, there's kind of, like, this misunderstanding that a strong female character can only be, like, a leather-clad, barely says anything, no background 2D character that's toting guns, and all she has in her life is her guns.
Right.
And that isn't what a strong female character is. Like, a strong female character is someone who has, like, emotions, who aren't afraid to cry, who are fully developed characters. And what I love also is that Obi-Wan completely respects her for it. Like, he's happy to defend her so she doesn't have to compromise her own beliefs.
Obi-Wan's a renaissance man.
Yeah.
He is, basically. I mean, that's how he acts.
He really is, actually. And he's so good at everything. Like, he went from, like, taking a blaster to, like, a lightsaber and kicked the crap out of Pre Vizsla.
Yeah.
And I love that these two just have so much respect and love for each other.
You know who he reminds me of? Number one in Star Trek The Next Generation, Commander Riker.
I can't say anything. I have such a limited knowledge of Star Trek.
They remind me a lot of each other.
Okay, I'm gonna go with that.
Okay.
My mom would get it. She's very disappointed. That's her like biggest disappointment is I've never been a Star Trek person. That's my mom's.
Well, we'll see if we can. We'll see if we can get you there, Hope.
Because I'm gonna sit down and watch. Because I saw some of the movies growing up and stuff like that, and I saw the first movie of the remake, and so I was just like, I'm gonna watch Star Trek. I've never given it a chance. And so I watched the original pilot with Captain, what's his name?
Captain Pike.
Yeah, with Captain Pike. And I really, really liked it. And I was like, this is great. This is so cool. And then I found out Captain Pike, I was like, wait, but what about Shatner? So I Googled it. I was like, Captain Pike. And I was just like, what do you mean he's only in one episode?
Yeah.
So I was really mad at that. Because, yeah, William Shatner's kind of a jerk to fans, so I just was like, I'm kind of not there yet.
Well, yeah. I kind of don't blame him, because I imagine he has to put up a big bubble around himself to keep, just to be able to live somewhat of the life he wants to.
I hear that people who have worked with William Shatner, like people in the industry, say, like, he's so full of himself for being famous for this one thing, and there was a, like,
read some of his books. They're great, but it's all about him. He's an actor. He's up his own ass, and whatever. As long as he churns out, I'm happy for him churning out his approach. Though in the original series and through his, role as Kirk, even though he was up his own ass, he made Kirk part of himself. And Kirk's kind of up his own ass. So it works out kind of perfectly. You know what I mean? He works his own foibles into it. And in that way, he's a really good actor. He's really cheesy and over the top, but he's still really good, which it can be annoying to some people and in other ways. And especially with Shatner, it just seems to work to his advantage. The cheesiness really enhances the experience, for me anyway.
I am not okay with the fact that at Dragon Con last year, he had a segment of his panel where he took fan fiction and made fun of it and read it on stage and made fun of the fans in front of them. That is not okay. Those are the people who pay your bills.
That's true. They pay his restaurant bills. He likes to eat out a lot.
Yeah, the thing is like, actors, you should treat your fans so. I'm also partially saying this because I wrote a very open letter to Michael Osaka, but I'm too scared to actually send it to him. And it's on my, I put it on my blog, and I'm too scared to actually send it to him. But the thing is like, it always pisses me off when actors do stuff like that to their fans.
Okay, how about this, Hope? We'll start you on Next Gen.
Okay.
You don't need the original for Next Gen.
I think you would
really enjoy the stories of the original series too. There's some just great classic science fiction, and it was, for its time, it was innovative in putting it's rife with social issues of the time, and universal social issues too. But Next Generation has more of a it's more refined in it, it's more of a mature approach to it. They had a better budget, they thought about it more, and it comes off as less of a, it's still got its cheese, but it's more serious, it's more serious science fiction than the original one, which was more melodramatic.
Good job, Chris. You stopped me right before I was about to rant.
Oh, good.
I was about to rant. I was about to vent about a week's worth of frustration, so good job.
We'll get you on the trek. That'll calm you down.
Short version is just...
Make your mom happy.
Just the short version is, like, actors, treat your fans nicely because they pay your bills. You wouldn't be where you are without your fans.
Yes.
And you should be nice to them. That's the short version.
Yes.
But to finish off my note about Satine and Obi-Wan, I like that they, like, call each other out on stuff, but it's all out of love. And I think a lot of the reason why Satine tries to take the Mickey out of Obi-Wan is because she doesn't want him to fight in the war in the first place. And I think it's all out of concern.
Right, right. Well, she also might have, in remembering her history of him, she might be like, yeah, and then getting involved with Obi-Wan means trouble.
Yeah, I mean, look at what Barriss was saying in the a few episodes back. Like, she was just like, you know, we're supposed to be peacekeepers. Like, why are we fighting in a war?
Yeah, exactly.
I think Barriss and Satine might actually get along very well, which is a little scary coming in season 5. So, anyway, one little note and then one last kind of bigger one. I realized at the end, but the Mandalorian guard reminds me of the current design of the Dora Milaje, which is the all-female guard in Wakanda in the Black Panther comics. The current design of the Dora Milaje is, like, really, like, I was just like, hey, are we on Wakanda now? Cool. That's great. But finally, my last note was, I really love that both Pre Vizsla and Satine essentially want the very same thing. They both want what's best for Mandalore, but they just have a different views of what best really is. Yeah. And that's what I always love about these stories.
And how to get to it.
Yeah, because they just really do want the best for their people, but they just want different things for their people. But I always found that interesting, that they both want the same things.
Well, it's not a matter of the evil people being crazed in this. They're more martial, and they have a different philosophy. Mm-hmm. But they're not just coming from like a crazed point of revenge or anything like that, or just like sheer war hungry. They have a philosophy about why they're doing it that they think is the right thing to do.
I'm going to make a comparison, but I just want to preface this comparison by saying I'm not saying that one side or the other is Pre Vizsla or Satine. So I just want to say that. I don't want to say that. It's like our current country with Republicans and Democrats, who both want the same things to have a strong country, but we just want different ways of doing things. So what did you think of the episode?
I thought it was a very strong episode, stronger than the last one. It might have gotten a 9. I gave it an 8. And because it probably would have gotten a 9, but it's obviously just the setup episode. You know, it's establishing some characters in Mandalore, so, you know, it's not completely contained. So, not that I'm docking it a point, but it's like a little above a solid episode. I really like this episode.
But yeah, we're getting into the episodes now where they all hinge on each other. Yeah. So they're 3 episode arcs.
And this is the establishing one, which is usually a little weaker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Although not a weak episode by any stretch of the imagination.
This is still better than Lightsaber Lost.
Yes.
Which not really anything happened.
Well, it's only 0.5. To me, it's only 0.5 ahead of that, but yeah. But that that got a lot of extra points for Jar Jar Camel. I liked him.
I forgot that you called him Jar Jar Camel until you mentioned that. So, like I kind of mentioned earlier, when I was younger, I always thought the Mandalorian episodes were boring. But now that I'm older, I really, truly appreciate them. And even though we're doing these in 3 separate episodes, I do strongly suggest watching all 3 straight through. I think they work together as in an hour and 90-minute format than 3 separate 20-minute formats.
Yeah.
The politics of this show is what makes Clone Wars so freaking good, and it gives it such a rich storyline. And Satine is such a champion female character, willing to stand by her beliefs no matter what. And she loves her people, and she's not afraid to get her hands dirty, and Pre Vizsla is a very threatening villain. And he's so similar to Satine, both wanting the best for their people, and he's just more a Miller Militant version of it. So I give this episode an 8 out of 10.
He's a more dangerous villain because he's not insane.
Yeah. I don't know who's actually more dangerous, him or Cad Bane, because they're both dangerous in different ways.
Yeah, but he's a Mandalorian, and he's a high-ranking Mandalorian, so he knows his battle plans and his plotting and planning, so he's very dangerous.
Yeah, sorry, I'm editing kind of the notes for time. Sorry. There you go. So, as always, listeners, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes or at Two True Freaks at the Facebook page. And if you leave us an iTunes review, for one, it helps people find the show. And two, we'll definitely read it on our show, and we would love to hear what you have to say, think about us. And so, this week, our feedback comes from our friend Aaron, who left us a comment about landing on Point Rain. And, yeah, So I originally was gonna leave this until next week, but it's a topic I'm super passionate about, and if I'm about to get into it. So you want to read the comment?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, on to my question for the episode. The whole Geonosis arc in particular was a hugely intense arc, in my opinion, between the accurate war depictions, the zombie Geonosians, and Ahsoka and Barriss trapped in the tank, and the whole kill me scene in the final episode. Do either of you guys think this may have been a little too intense for kids? I'm okay with mature storytelling for kids, but does burning bugs alive on screen cross a line? If it was the clones on the receiving end, I guarantee it wouldn't have passed any censors unless it was off-screen in shadows without screaming or anything. But since they're bugs, it's okay. So here's a second question. Is that hypocritical since it's droids and bugs really getting brutalized and it's okay but people can't be? Yeah, it is. Especially with the droids in sort of a story sense, I think it's hypocritical. But with the bugs, yeah. We were just putting up that episode. I was just editing it the other day, and, you know, we were talking about how the Geonosians aren't just like an anthill. And who know, you know, I don't even want to downplay the intelligence of an anthill, but they have a civilization. They have language. They have technology. People come to hire them to make advanced technology. So they are, you know, they are sentient beings. And yeah, they were getting killed horribly, which happens in war, but this is the first time that we've seen such gleeful abandon of sentient life on screen in Star Wars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're on fire and crawling on the ground while burning. And I think they totally got away with it because they're bug-like aliens.
Okay, I'm going to break this into answer the two questions separately. So the first question, do I think that this is too intense for kids? No, I do not in any way, shape, or form. Clone Wars came from a time period where children's television was starting to change. And I don't want to say the predecessor, because it wasn't alone. A lot of the shows during this time started going in this kind of direction.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the children's television scape nowadays, it's a very different landscape than it was in 2008, 2009. And Clone Wars is really one of the shows at the forefront of doing it. And to give you three examples of some of the things that's going on, I'm a huge advocate for very progressive children television shows. I was a nanny for several years. I have many nieces and nephews, and I'm always looking for shows that I can share with them. I'm going to give you four examples. One is Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra as one mass. And in that show, it covered not only, it approached war that a child can understand, it has a blind character as a main character, and she freaking rips an airship out of the sky being blind. And like, it approaches characters with disabilities and showing them that they're strong. It reveals at the end that Korra and Asami, which are two females, are actually in love with each other. It's super progressive in its storytelling. And then you have shows like, you know, Gravity Falls, which is gives children horror stories. It gives them Illuminati theories. There's an entire episode where Dipper and Pacifica are hunting a ghost, and the taxidermy heads on the wall start spewing blood and chanting satanic chants. And this is a children's show. And then you have episodes like My Little Pony. They did an entire episode about communism using real-world examples from current-day China. They had an episode that was like Back to the Future, where one action literally caused multiple wars in the future and brought about the apocalypse. And then they had a Christmas story where if this one pony destroyed Christmas, she literally would wipe out all humanity on life. Like, she went to the future and she was like, where is everyone? And the ghosts of Christmas futures were like, oh, they're all dead because of you. Congratulations. And she was like, what? I mean, and then finally, like, to me, the best example of where children's television now is hands down Steven Universe. Steven Universe, there's a reason it's currently nominated for an Emmy, and it's been nominated for Emmys in the past. Because the base story of Steven Universe is two lesbians and a gender-fluid woman are raising a young boy to help prevent an invading culture from starting a genocide on planet Earth. that is Steven Universe. But the way that the storytelling is done, for example, is written, it's so amazing. Like, I gave the example to you on Facebook, Aaron, where episode one of Steven Universe is about Steven being said that his favorite ice cream is being canceled. Steven, episode 100 of Steven Universe, Steven meets an extremist rebel and murders her. Like, it's that kind of progression. And what's so great is all these current television shows are approaching these incredibly intense themes, but they do them in a way that children can understand them. And I don't think it's intense at all. And to use an example from Alex Hirsch, who is the creator of Gravity Falls, he used this example at Comic-Con that so many TV stations and writers dumb down children's material. Like, they believe that they should dumb down children's television shows because they believe that children will consume anything. And he said that's a mistake. Children's television writing should be like feeding a homeless man. Yeah, the homeless man will happily eat anything, but they would rather eat something that's good and something that's great for them. And they would rather and prefer that. And so I'm a huge advocate for making sure that children are open and to these themes, these very real world themes, but presented in a way that's good and presented in a way that they can understand. And I think Clone Wars does a really good job of, like, today's episode, there's a lot of political shit going down in this episode, but it's presented in a way where a child can look at it and go, okay, well, that's the bad guy and that's the good guy. But then, like I said, as I got older, I now really super appreciate the politics of Clone Wars, which I didn't appreciate them when I was younger, because it's presented in a way that a child can grow up with Clone Wars and go back and watch it as an adult and be like, oh man, this is way deeper than I thought it was.
Yeah, that went over my head. Yeah, and I mean, it's up to the parents too, but I find when I was a little kid, I wanted to get my hands on adult stuff and I could process it. You know, people don't give kids enough credit. And especially if you have parents,
kids are idiots, and they're not. Kids are incredibly intuitive and so smart.
And if you have parents that explain to them or talk to them about what they've seen and answer questions and stuff, then having that material, you know, the best children's stories. Oh, that's why Roald Dahl is such a great children's author, because he puts terrifying and you know, even evil things in the story, because he makes it more like life. You know, it's not a sugar-coated fantasy for children. It's more like preparation for life, and life isn't always pretty, but the trick is to do it without crushing, while still making a good story that still makes the kids happy. And that's why, you know, Charlotte's Web's ends with the death of the title character. A lot of children's stories end with the death of the title character, you know. So
Matilda is a very Matilda was abused literally her entire life, but she did it. It was it's written in a way to where she overcame it and it made it her strong.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the stuff that kids like the best. They still like the fluffy stuff, too, and they'll watch it. But the stuff that ends up, you know, going from generation to generation and parents remembering forever usually has some dark areas in it. And kids love that stuff.
Yeah. And for me to answer your second question, I do think it's a little bit hypocritical to brutalize the bugs and the droids, but it's okay that humans can't be brutalized. I think it is a double standard in Star Wars. The two examples I really use is when we get to season 5, there's an arc where R2-D2 leads a platoon of droids and they're being helped along by General Gascon. I hate that arc. Outside of the introduction of Gregor, like, I think that is hands down the worst arc in Star Wars: The Clone Wars. I can't stand that entire arc. Other than the fact that it's really slow storytelling, they could have done it in 2 episodes, and literally nothing happens for 4 fucking episodes, and I hate it. The problem, that's, like, not even the main problem with it. The issue I have with that arc is that General Gascon is written as a hero. And the reason I have a problem with that is he talks to the droids the exact same way that General Krell in the Umbara arc, who is a villain, talks to the clones. And the way that he talks to the clones is he talks down to them. He thinks they're worthless. He literally makes them kill each other. And yet we label Krell a villain, and because Gascon, who acts the exact same way to the droids, he can get away with it because they're droids. And, yeah, he has a little turn of heart at the end. He's like, oh, the droids aren't that bad. But at the end, he's just like, oh, shit, I have to work with them again in the future. I don't want to work with them ever again. They're fucking droids. And we label Gascon a hero, but Krell's a villain. And I think that's a huge double standard. I don't think that is appropriate in Star Wars. And that's why that's one of my least favorite arc. That's my most hated arc. I'm just going to say now, I fucking hate that arc. I can't stay. I dread when we get there because I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. But where something that I appreciate in Rebels, though, it's like the difference between killing droids in Clone Wars, which is kind of fun because like there's no humans dying, but then we get to Rebels and they're killing human beings. And, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, they're the Empire, they're the bad guys, yes. But there's a human under that. There's a person under that. There's a person with a family under that, which is why what I appreciate so much in Rebels is we got the episode The Honorable Ones with Agent Kallus. I thought that was a very, very smart move on their part because it gave some sympathy for the Empire because Zeb realized that the Rebels aren't all that great either. You know, a Rebel came along and murdered Kallus's friends, like went person by person and murdered Agent Kallus's friends and left him to live to tell about it. And that's a big reason why Kallus fights for the Empire is because he sees these Rebels and they hurt him. They hurt him deeply, and it took away that part of his life. And I thought that was a very smart move to show that not everybody in the Empire are bad guys. And even then, like a person like Kallus could have a possible change of heart. And so I thought that was a very smart move on their part. And so I do think it's a huge double standard for them to at least not recognize that the Geonosians did have meaning, and that they were a people, and they did have advanced technologies, especially since, like, they were the bad guys, and they helped lead to the Empire, and then the Empire turned around and destroyed them. I wish there was a moment in Rebels where at least Rex, who fought in Geonosis, it was like, where he had some line like, you know, I fought them, and I'm glad I fought them, but I never wanted this for them. I never wanted a genocide. That they didn't deserve that. Like, I wish there was some line like that.
Nope.
That's my rant.
Get the spray.
Oh, man. My voice hurts now. I talked a lot in this episode.
Hey, well, you know where you can find us?
Yeah, your turn.
You can find us at twotruefreaks.com, where we have 8 billion trillion podcasts, just like the number of planets there are in the known universe. They're just everywhere, all different. With J-Guides and Jedi being the most important one of all of them. And we have a link to our Amazon page. So if you buy stuff from Amazon, if you go there through that link, we'll get a little reward for stuff that you buy. And they don't charge you. So yeah, it's just free money for us, and it doesn't cost you anything. I highly recommend it. We have a Facebook page. We look up Two True Freaks on Facebook, and we have another Two True Freaks Cantina, where the Facebook page sort of has all the listings of our podcast coming out, and the cantina is just a place to go and talk about stuff. Nerd
it's our
stuff.
Bullshit zone.
It's a no man's land. It's
our bullshit zone.
Yes, it is a bullshit zone. And we also have a presence on Twitter. There's a Two True Freaks on Twitter run by the hard-working Gene Hendricks, and who's also a dancing machine, by the way, and a podcasting machine.
Who also made our store for us that we didn't know about.
And yep, and there's even a J-Guys and Jedi Twitter presence run by Hope Mullinex. Where do they find Hope Mullinex on the interwebs?
My voice really hurts. Can you do it?
Okay, let me see if I... There, you're on What the Fangirl.
See how much you listened to me the last 20 something episodes.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying. I just want to get all this stuff right. I know you're on What the Fangirl, and is that whatthefangirl.com?
Yes.
And geekygirl.com is your own thing, right?
Geeky Girl Experience.
Geekygirlexperience.com.
This is fun. I like this game. Go on.
And of course, you can find her on Facebook and and Twitter.
Not Facebook.
Not Facebook? Never mind.
Facebook is my private stuff. If I haven't met you in real life, I don't want you to follow me on Facebook. Just because I have pictures of like my nieces and my tias and my family. My professional. Okay, tag. I'm back in.
Oh,
so you
my Arizona iced tea.
Are you okay?
Yeah, the Arizona iced tea is trying to kill me.
My game killed Chris. I'm sorry about that.
What am I? What did I? What did I miss?
You can follow me at Topomonas on Twitter.
Ah!
But please, like, seriously, don't follow me on Facebook because that's my private stuff. And that's where, like, my family stuff and my friends stuff. If I haven't met you in real life, I don't want you to follow me on Facebook. With the exception of being, like, Teacher Freak stuff. Which you can find
me in real life.
I know, once. We need to meet again. But yep, that's it. That was actually pretty, you know, Chris Goldstar, you did pretty good with that.
Well, we are, this is what, episode 36, so I should.
I was interested to see how much.
Should have some of it just at least by osmosis.
That is very true. Like, when my friends still had Greeting from Storybooks podcast, I used to have the number memorized because I said it every week.
Right, and I mean, we do the podcast every week, and then I listen to it again when I edit it, so, yeah.
I think you did a very good job.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, I don't have anything else for this episode, do you?
No. Come back next week for more Mandalore.
And until next time, let John Favreau be with you and Greg Proops.
The Proop.
The Proops. Aw, man. That's what we should call the guy next week. The Proops.
Proops to him. I give him mad Proops.
Mad Proops. And I end with my evil laugh that I know hates.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
All right, children, the lights are out and the party's over. It's time for me, Dr. D, to start running and say goodbye for a little while. And I know you're gonna miss me, so I'll leave you with this. You know that big ball of radiation we call the sun? Well, it'll burst you into flames if you stay in one place too long. That is if the static don't get you first. So remember, even if you're dusted, you may be gone. But out here in the desert, your shadow lives on without you. This is Dr. Death Defying, signing off.